Get ready.
TheEducationLawyers.com Sunday School Show.
You don't mind if I just sit in on your class this afternoon, do you?
With your host, Joseph Montgomery.
Noisy bunch, aren't they?
Yes, but if you stand there long enough, they'll usually quiet down. Don't try and shout over them.
And it begins in 10.
I know how to find the answer.
9.
And I will
8,
find the answer.
7.
Never let somebody tell you
6,
you can't do something.
5.
Not even me.
4.
You got a dream?
3.
You got to protect it.
2.
You want something?
1.
Go get it.
Let's go, go, go.
Good morning, and welcome to another episode of the EducationLawyers.com Sunday School Show. We are broadcasting live from the ESPN studio in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. My name is Mary Montgomery, and I'm your host today, sitting in for my son, Joseph Montgomery. I'm an educator with a doctorate in special education with over 40 years of experience in the field of special education. I've been a teacher and district administrator. To continue my advocacy for children and to align my interest, I left the school setting and now work as a paralegal at Montgomery Law, still fighting for kids' rights. There are many great things that go on in our schools today, but there are also egregious things that go on as well. And unfortunately, there are too many of them. Being a part of helping to solve these problems is something that I will never give up on, and what the attorneys and paralegals at Montgomery Law are committed to doing each and every day. I am proud of the work that Joe and all of the attorneys at Montgomery Law do to advocate for students. Vern Trent is also with me today to greet and speak with our guest. Vern is a school psychologist with over 40 years of experience in the school setting himself. Vern is an expert in the field of school climate and safety and has also served as an administrative law judge for over 20 years. Vern comes to us with a wealth of knowledge and experiences. Montgomery Law practices throughout Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Florida. Montgomery Law focuses its efforts on education, special education, and serious school incidents. That's IEP issues, bullying, evaluation issues, civil rights matters, assaults, sexual assaults, and all of the awful events that too often occur in our school buildings. At Montgomery Law, we represent students and parents. We believe that a quality education is a right owed to all. It may sound harsh, but at Montgomery Law, we sue schools. As Joe says, we sue schools out of love, a love for education and for all of the benefits a safe and effective education can provide, not only to students, but also for the community as a whole. We sue schools for your children and grandchildren so they can receive a better education. The Sunday School Show does not give legal advice. Montgomery Law does not give legal advice until it has entered into a written attorney-client relationship. No part of this broadcast creates an attorney-client relationship. The Sunday School Show is built on and around education and learning and answers questions that many people have but are afraid to ask or do not know who to ask. Today, our guests will be speaking on various topics. We have in our studio Dr. Rachmanda Campbell, who will speak with us regarding dyslexia and what can be done to address student struggles. We're going to start with her. But please, we want you guys to call in. Call free, please, on our toll-free number at 888-728-9941. That's 888-728-9941 or 267-767-9940. Please call in with your questions, concerns, issues. A little bit about Dr. Campbell. She's the founder and chief executive officer for the Reading Clinic, which provides evidence-based diagnostic testing and educational services for children at risk for academic failure. Dr. Campbell has consulted, trained, and mentored educators and parents on best teaching practices for diverse learners, observable dyslexia indicators, and advocacy tips for dyslexia locally, regionally, and internationally. Dr. Campbell recently spoke on Capitol Hill about dyslexia in diverse communities. Dr. Campbell will be a keynote speaker discussing dyslexia at the 2019 Division of International Special Education and Services Conferences, a division of the Council for Exceptional Children, this June in Montego Bay, Jamaica. Dr. Campbell's invaluable teaching experiences have afforded her the opportunity to teach and supervise in the areas of primary, intermediate, secondary, as well as post-secondary education. So she has lots of experiences. She's also served as a delegate in the historic and unprecedented gathering of leaders and policymakers in the first African-American summit convened in West Africa. She has an undergraduate degree in elementary ed from Delaware State and a master's degree from St. Joe's as a K-12 reading specialist. She's also a supervisor in curriculum and instruction and has a principal certificate and a doctorate from Wilmington University. So we've heard a lot about, or we hear the word dyslexia. I think my child's dyslexic. Your child's dyslexic. School district's telling you, you know, we don't work with dyslexia. But so what is it? Over 40 million American adults are dyslexic. That's a lot. And only 2 million of them know it. Dyslexia is not tied to IQ. Einstein had dyslexia and had an IQ of 160. Dyslexia occurs among people of all economic and ethnic backgrounds. Approximately 20% of school-age children in the U.S. are dyslexic. That information was taken from the American Dyslexia Association. There's also a Dear Colleague letter, which, you know, listeners, I want you to pay close attention to, that was published in 2015 by the United States Department of Education, Office of Special Education and Rehabilitation, which makes it clear that there is nothing, I repeat, nothing in IDEA, that's the Individuals with Disability Education Act, that's the federal law, that would prohibit the use of the term dyslexia for reading or dysgraphia for writing. In IDEA evaluations, eligibility determinations, or IEP documents. So if you're told that it's something that doesn't exist or that school districts don't deal with it, that's not true. The U.S. Department of Education confirmed this fact because there was so much controversy about it in another letter written in 2016 and added that if a determination is made through the evaluation process that a particular assessment for dyslexia is needed to ascertain whether your child has a disability and the child's needs, including those related to the child's reading difficulties, then the public agency, that's the school district or charter school, must conduct the evaluation at public expense. So please, don't let them tell you, don't let a school or charter school tell you that you have to go out and pay for your own evaluation. That's untrue. So let's get started with Dr. Campbell. Dr. Campbell, welcome to the show, and thank you for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you. So you've worked with children who have dyslexia, correct?
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about the students that you work with? We hear a lot about the term dyslexia, but what exactly is it? And how would a teacher and or parent know that a child struggles from dyslexia?
A parent or a teacher would know that a child struggles if they have a lack and a strong skill base in phonological awareness. Phonological awareness includes all of the primary skills that children need to exhibit in terms of auditory processing, being able to process beginning sounds, middle sounds, and ending sounds, and associating those sounds with letters and the association, the graphophonemic, in terms of they may identify the letter L, but do they know the sound for letter L? They may be able to identify the letter R, but can they identify the sound of it and the placement of it? Oftentimes, they may be able to identify the placement at the beginning and even at the end, but a lot of children struggle with those middle sounds, and that's a telltale sign. Difficulties with rhyming patterns, rhyming sounds, difficulties, nursery rhymes, syllables, phonemes, anything dealing with that basic foundation. And oftentimes, a lot of people feel they believe that phonics is the primary foundation. Actually, phonemic awareness is the primary foundation, which segues into phonic skills and structural language, decoding skills. And that is what we consider word calling. They can word call. They can pronounce the word in isolation, but can they put it all together? And those are some of the telltale signs.
So I know a lot of times a parent will say, oh, my child is printing the letters of the alphabet backwards. You know, I think they're dyslexic. I mean, you know, that's what parents usually look at first. When, of course, because their children are young, they start to write. Is that something they should be concerned about?
And I will tell you, when children are developing, when they're young, between the grade levels and ages of pre-K, even through first grade, that is a developmental issue, and some children will write backwards, and they will continue to write backwards at that time frame. However, if they continue to write backwards in second and third grade, that is definitely a red flag, and that definitely warrants attention. It is not the primary indicator that an individual is dyslexic, but it is an identifier.
Okay, so parents out there, don't worry. You know, if your child's in, you know, kindergarten or first grade or preschool, if they're writing their letters backwards, that it's the learning part of the learning process.
Absolutely.
If I might ask a question, and it's not specifically related to being dyslexic, a parent asked me, and there are a group of them who are homeschooling their children, And the mother said to me, well, my daughter can read, but her comprehension, she just doesn't understand. I said to her, tell me exactly what you are saying. Well, apparently the child, if you put something in front of her, she can identify and call the words. But then the mother says, but she can't remember a thing that she just read. Yes. And I don't know what to do. Well, since she is homeschooling her child, the first thing I said to her was, you need to go back to the school to tell the school you have a concern and you want an evaluation for your child and let them tell you. Rather than me give you suggestions and you try things, you need the support of the professionals at the school. So for parents who have their kids at home that are homeschooling them and are not in special ed, what would you say to a parent like that?
I will definitely tell you there is a word of caution for all parents in that scenario, because I often hear that the child can pronounce words, but they have difficulty retaining or remembering information. With homeschooling, you have to be even more careful because they don't necessarily follow the curriculum, or they're using various resources and materials that are good materials, but they may not be the connection that that child actually needs. So you definitely gave the correct advice in going back to the school to get the evaluation. One of the challenges with anyone who exhibits dyslexia is that in terms of they have a phenomenal memory. The memory has nothing to do with acquisition and being able to retain the information. So because they've seen words over and over and over again, they have a phenomenal memory, but they cannot comprehend or tell you exactly the beginning, the middle, the end, or the context of what they actually read. And that is definitely a telltale sign. Also, their oral reading will be slow and laborious. Their reading comprehension and their reading, oral reading, will actually be below grade level.
And while we have you here, periodically, I want you to give out your number so that if there are parents out there listening and you have any concerns, in addition to, again, putting the responsibility on the school, you also have external resources, and we have an excellent resource here today.
Yes, I can be reached at area code 215-395-8591, and we are located on City Avenue at 225 East City Avenue, Suite 108 in Bala Cynwyd.
Okay, just repeat that number again, and we'll get it at the end of the show as well.
215-395-8591.
And listeners, please be sure to call in if you have any questions. You can ask Dr. Campbell. So moving on, the Office of Special Education, I talked about the Dear Colleague letter, that it indicates with appropriate teaching methods, students with dyslexia can learn successfully. What are those supports that teachers need to provide? And I want to also add this to parents. We're not asking for the best, because under IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, we can't ask for the best. We can't ask for that. We can ask for what's appropriate. And that's an important word, appropriate. So what are the appropriate teaching methods that students with dyslexia need to learn?
Those appropriate teaching methods incorporate a multi-sensory structured language approach. What that simply means is that we want to focus on the VOCT strategies, V-A-K-T. V for visual auditory processing, A, auditory visual processing, K, kinesthetic, and T, tactile. So we want to tap into all of the senses, seeing, touching, hearing, repeating, and all of this develops the language and the acquisition and the processing for the child. And multiple repetitions of that type of instruction is needed. Every classroom needs to be as engaging, as hands-on, and as multi-sensory as possible. So they don't necessarily need to have a specific dyslexia program. Every teaching classroom should incorporate differentiated instruction, whether it's elementary, middle school, or high school. That is just the dynamic of an effective teacher, and it's certainly attainable and can be done.
So is there any reason why teachers cannot do that in a public school, cannot do the kinds of things that you do outside of school?
To be quite honest with you, what they have limitations on doing is providing the diagnosis for dyslexia, because schools and school districts, they provide an educational classification. Outside of the independent evaluation is going to provide the actual terminology for dyslexia. In terms of the multi-sensory structured language approach, they can certainly implement that in the classroom. That is a part of what effective teaching incorporates, whether the child is dyslexic or not.
So again, parents, if you believe that your child is dyslexic, ask for a reading evaluation by a reading specialist. And if the public school says, well, we don't have a reading specialist, we can't do it, then put it in writing. Write a letter and say, I want an independent reading evaluation at district expense, and I would like to select my own reading evaluator. And in that way, you can get a true determination whether or not your instincts are correct.
Yes.
So the most important skill or skills that children need to learn to meet the challenges they face with dyslexia, what would you say?
Yes, those most important skills actually include phonemic awareness, letter sound association, a strong understanding and application of beginning sounds, middle sounds, ending sounds. So, for instance, in the word cat, the child should be able to identify each of those letters, C, A, T. They should be able to pronounce each of those individual sounds, K, at. And they should also be able to blend those sounds. So that is performing in isolation. But when they see the word in the context of a sentence, a paragraph, or a story, they should be able to read it as well. So those foundational skills for phonemic awareness are going to segue into phonics skills, which are going to build and enhance their oral reading fluency, which in turn actually builds up their reading comprehension overall.
So you're saying a lot of things which to you seem very simple. And listening to you, it's simple. And I'm thinking, why the heck can't schools do that? And I know there's additional training that's needed. Are you ever called in from school districts to do any type of training for the teachers?
Yes, I've been called in several times. I go to public schools, private schools. I go wherever I'm invited. And in some instances, it's a tug of war, I'll be quite honest. There's a lack of funding. There's a lack of awareness. There's a lack of time. School districts have curriculums that they have to meet. And to be quite honest, they cater to the masses. And so if the child tends to be the well-behaved little boy or the well-behaved little girl or the classroom helper, oftentimes their challenges go unnoticed.
Exactly.
For instance, I had a parent call me yesterday, and she was told by the school, well, your daughter doesn't qualify for special education, and she is only one level behind grade level. And so my comment to the parent was, well, she's not supposed to be behind grade level at all. And this child is working 10 times as hard as the next child just to function one grade level behind grade level.
And what she just said is very important, because here is a child that obviously needs some support and assistance and does not qualify for special ed. And unfortunately, what a lot of school districts will do is make that statement, well, she's only a year behind, she's only 6 months behind, and most importantly, does not qualify for special ed, because special ed has been the panacea for all academic problems. Let's evaluate the child, put the child in special ed. The vast majority of students that have difficulties are not going to qualify for special ed, but schools still have a responsibility for addressing those concerns. And this is where someone like Dr. Campbell comes in. If the school does not have a reading specialist, then yes, she can come in and work with teachers so that they can still work with those students that are having difficulty instead of passing them right on. And that's a shame that that happens.
Absolutely.
So, Vern, I'm going to pass this question on to you. You were a school psychologist in the school district for how many years?
35.6.
But he was counting. And you were a hearing officer as well.
Yes, I was an administrative hearing officer out of the department, the Right to Education in Harrisburg.
So, not to put you on the spot, but I'm going to read from the law. So, FAPE, a free appropriate public education, is available to any individual child with a disability who needs special education and related services. And here's the key. Even though the child has not failed or been retained in a course or grade and is advancing from grade to grade. So that's exactly what you said.
Absolutely.
Okay? Just because you're advancing from grade to grade and you're passing doesn't mean you're not eligible for special ed. So, Vern, put on your school psychologist hat. How many times was it requested of you to do an evaluation and you looked at the paperwork and said, well, you know what? This kid's okay. This kid's not failing versus your hearing officer hat that had to look at the situation and make a determination that, you know what, the school absolutely should have evaluated the child, because now the child has more problems, such as academics, has social, emotional, you know, behavioral issues because of the struggles.
That's an excellent question, Mary. Starting with the evaluation, school districts have a responsibility for child find. So initially, even before the kid gets into school, they're supposed to be working with the daycare centers and the early childhood programs to identify children. Many times that doesn't happen. Now let's take that further. As a school psychologist, I focused on high schools later on in my career. And I can name what, no, I'm not going to name the high school, but the principal called me in and said to me, I want to know why you put one-third of my kids in special ed. I said to the principal, those kids were in special ed when they came to your high school. I did not do that. But then he said, I don't see a difference between those students and my Title I students. Title I students were regular ed students who had academic difficulty, and herein lies the problem. Now, if I put my administrative law judge hat on and apply the law, then the school district dropped the ball, not only for those kids in special ed, but for those Title I students, because you have to determine what their strengths and weaknesses are. And then the law says that children have to make meaningful educational progress as opposed to de minimis educational progress. Sometimes the standard in many school districts is de minimis. As long as the kid is making some progress, they feel that they are doing their job. But no, legally, they are not. But it takes parents to demand that the school districts do what they are supposed to do. And as Mary said, oftentimes money is not an excuse. The law says they have to do these things. This is another reason why reading specialists, external evaluations, and even Montgomery Law tends to be very important, because although we are talking about children and education, a lot of parents, I would say most parents, don't realize these laws are civil rights laws. They aren't necessarily purely educational laws. They are civil rights laws. So the civil rights of these children are being violated. So if they aren't receiving the services, you as a parent can go in and demand the services. And that, again, that's where Montgomery Law can help.
So Title I cannot or does not take the place of special education. School districts will say to you, well, your child's in Title I, so we can't evaluate for special ed. Or your child's eligible for special ed, but they can't get both. So there's really nothing that says that you can't get both, and there's nothing that says that Title I takes the place of special education. And if we talk about money, school districts are sued not only by Montgomery Law, but by other attorneys as well. And the money that the school districts have to pay in settlement agreements and in compensatory education, they could use that money, especially the School District of Philadelphia, and train all their teachers how to teach children with dyslexia. And that's the issue. If you cannot read, reading is the foundation of everything. If you can't read, then you're not going to succeed in life. And, you know, they try to put a Band-Aid on it and say, well, you know, we'll read for the child or we'll do different things. But they have to teach them. They have to teach them how to read.
And that's something that is very important. Sooner or later, school districts are going to realize that if they put the effort in up front, right, instead of waiting till the child has 4 or 5 years of failure behind them to try to say, okay, now we are going to do something. They always talk about prevention and intervention, but oftentimes that does not help. Children, that end up getting evaluated oftentimes have experienced years of failure and frustration. And again, it makes it difficult to go back to rehabilitate and remediate because they have experienced failure for so long.
And then the key word that you said is they talk about. They talk about. And, you know, something may come down from the state that says, you have to do in-service. Okay, great. Well, they do in-service one time or two times a year, and they think, okay, we did our job. No, it has to be ongoing, and that's what's lacking. So the ongoing, and, you know, I've been in education for a very long time, and I don't know when they're going to learn, but I hope it's in my lifetime because I see too many kids struggling, and then they drop out of school. And then, you know, basically it's all downhill.
And we're here today talking to Dr. Campbell, who has a plethora of strategies. Why not have her come to a school, work with a teacher or group of teachers to have them integrate those strategies into the curriculum? Because that's the other way they get out of things. Oh, we have to adhere to our curriculum. Okay, well, add to that curriculum. Integrate these strategies into the curriculum. Bring in an expert to work with the teachers. It's going to make not only the student a better student, but it's going to help the teachers because they will begin looking at those students in a different light. And believe me, children pick up on that.
What should daily instruction in the classroom look like? You talked about VAKT.
Yes.
And that's something that we all know. But again, we have listeners out there who are saying, well, VAKT sounds great. I know, you know, what that is. But what does that actually look like? And again, I want to ask our listeners, please call in. Please tell us about experiences in school, struggles that your child is having, even maybe good stuff that a school's done. Again, our number, 888-728-9941, 888-728-9941. Ryan's getting ready to answer your phone calls. Also, 267-767-9940. So if you can answer that question, like, what does that actually look like? If I walked into a classroom that was using those strategies, can you give an example of what it would look like?
Sure. The classroom should be colorful. The classroom should be vibrant. The classroom should be engaging. The classroom should be set up in terms of whole group instruction, small group instruction, one-on-one instruction, instruction that provides scaffolding and modeling. And when I speak about scaffolding and modeling, whatever is being demonstrated in terms of word study, phonics, phonemic awareness, as the classroom teacher, I need to model it. So my modeling, it's almost like an actor or an actress on stage. I have to speak it. I have to verbalize it. I have to act it out. I have to be engaged with it. I have to demonstrate it. So for instance, when we're working with phonemic awareness and we're working with the placement of sounds, phonemic awareness is made up of several different tasks. Segmentation, where you're segmenting sounds. So for the word cat, if I segment the ah sound, the middle sound, I'm taking it out. If I isolate the t sound, I'm isolating the t sound and I'm taking it out. If I'm replacing the k sound in cat and replacing it with the m sound, the letter n, the new word is mat. So all of that is engagement. But for the child to see that visually, there is a such thing called as word builders, word builder cards, Alconin boxes, phonemic awareness discs, reading rods. These are all reading manipulatives, phonological manipulatives. So it's hands-on. And to be quite honest with you, a lot of these activities appear as if they're games. The children like them. They're colorful, they're engaging, they're tactile. They can use bingo types of games. They can use word sensory cards. A lot of the phonemic awareness cards and letter sound cards, the vowels are color-coded, so they may be red. All of the consonants may be in a different color, black or either blue, and they have a raised embossed foil seal. So not only does the child see the differentiation in terms of the color, they also feel the differentiation in terms of how to trace that letter. So if they have difficulty with visual motor integration skills in terms of writing, they can practice touching it, feeling it, tracing it. Engagement also looks like using sand. You have a sandbox, and the child is able to trace the letters and build the letters by writing them with their hand, writing it in the air. and then writing it on paper. And those are just some very simplistic types of activities that do not require a specific dyslexia program. That's simply just a part of good foundational teaching at the early grade levels. And to be quite honest with you, I have middle school and high school clients who still need that type of instruction, who need that primary foundation that they never received between pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grade.
And things that parents can purchase on their own. Any ideas of where they could shop for these items?
Yes, absolutely. Parents can shop at the dollar store. The parents can shop at Walmart. They can shop online at Amazon. I get some wonderful resources from Amazon, all of those different stores, teacher stores, Lakeshore, Lakeside. There's all sorts of manipulatives that can be purchased online. Also, you want to have a heavy foundation on oral reading fluency. I cannot stress that enough. Parents will ask me, well, should my middle school student and my high school student still be working on oral reading fluency? Absolutely, because the pronunciation, the flow of reading, the articulation of reading is extremely important. Because if you think about it, they may be able to identify those words in isolation, but when they put it all together to read the paragraph or to read the story or to read the novel, they are constantly stopping, hesitating, skipping, backtracking, doing all sorts of things. Their eyes are playing tricks on them, and the comprehension suffers because they are spending so much mental energy trying to sound out the word, remember what the word was, and oftentimes they use words out of context. So they may be thinking reception, but when they read it, they may say recession. They may be thinking big, but they may say monstrous, or they use words, big hefty words out of context that don't necessarily fit the context of what they're reading. So oral reading fluency is extremely important as well. And that's another telltale sign. If you have a student who is not reading fluently, that's a red flag.
Okay, I'm gonna get back to you on that. We have a caller on line one. Good morning, thank you for calling.
Good morning. First of all, I want to give a shout out to Rocky, my friend, and congratulations to her endeavors as she's climbing to make a difference for the people and the children in the world.
That was nice. And who am I speaking with?
Oh, my name is Carlton.
Carlton. Hi, Carlton. Thank you. Wow.
Okay. I want to get your guy's name. I know my friend. Are you Mary?
I am.
Okay. And then the gentleman is the psychologist?
Yes, Vern Trent.
Okay. Let me take a deep breath. Because this is where it all starts at.
Okay.
First of all, I want to go on the money aspect of this. I think teachers are way underpaid.
Okay.
And that's a sadness within itself. And now I'm going to jump to when my child, my firstborn, was in school. And I went down to the school district of Philadelphia. He got in trouble for something stupid. But I asked the teacher, I said, why did you guys get rid of spelling words? I mean, the school district or whatever, whoever she was at the time. I said, why did you guys get rid of spelling words? Why is it? Spelling words not in the school anymore. She simply told me, you give your child the spelling words. So once again, right there is where part of the problem starts. When you take away teaching our children how to spell, growing the ladder of giving them the foundation of the words, you know, keeping them minimized over words. That's where our problem starts at. So this problem's been going on for years.
If I can stop you for a moment, and I'm stopping you to state that I do agree with you. I remember the school district used to have what was called the Dolch word list.
Yes.
And it was for every grade level. Yeah. These are the words kids you had to learn and use. And I can remember my mom with my kids saying, okay, you're in such and such a grade, and she would whip out this dope word list.
Yeah.
And not only did my mom, and her name is Vivian Hansberry, she's an educator, all of my kids and my grandkids had to go to Hansberry School during the summer. And that is what they had to do. Whatever grade they were in, She had the Deutsch word list for that grade, and not only did she make them learn to spell those words, she made them learn the definitions of those words. Mm-hmm. So you are right on target with that. So go on and continue.
But also with that Deutsch, also with that Deutsch list, a lot of teachers, because they needed the students to learn to read those words, so they were basically just word readers. They didn't take the time to teach them the phonics, which is what we're talking about. So they would get the list. They, like Vern said, you know, the kids would have to learn it. They're going to go home and they're going to memorize them. They're going to help each other. And they're going to bypass the real crux of it, just like kids use calculators today. They don't learn how to really work out a problem. They just get on their calculator. So, you know, with that Deutsch list also came the, you know, avoidance of learning your phonics. So, all right, thank you. You can move.
Go across.
Love talking to
we're
you.
We're educating yes. each
yes.
other.
Right, absolutely.
Well, that's it. Okay, and I'm glad you said that, psychologist. Okay, so now let's go to the reading segment of it. I think, now, I've seen so much on social media where I said, darn it, I should have been a teacher. I could have been a teacher. And my job would have been, if they would have done this in our earlier years, I'm sure all of us is close in age, is focus on just teaching the child how to read. You know, then where my friend over there is at now, because she's at the she's phenomenal.
Right.
Okay. She's right on point. This is like another whole encyclopedia for us to embrace. Right. So we're so far ahead where if you tell a child that now, he's going to look at you like, what? And I'm not trying to put nobody down.
Yeah, right.
But remember, we're adults, and he or she is just a child.
Exactly.
So if they would have focused on the reading aspect, and like I said, I should have been a teacher because I would have made sure my children been able to read.
Right.
That would have been the focus no matter what.
Exactly.
And like right now, doctor, I'm focusing on psychology as well. And I want to say thank you because I feel a little more comfortable. And that's where we're at right now. That's another whole problem that I missed out to be able to express to people.
Right.
When you make a person uncomfortable, it's hard for them to develop and grow.
Right. Exactly. So, and we're so happy that you called in. And if there's anything that Montgomery Law can do for you, and also continue to get some help with Dr. Campbell, continue to listening to our show. We're going to have some more information on special education law. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. We have another caller on line two, please. Good morning, Lorna. How are you?
Good morning. Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for calling in today to the Sunday School Show with Joe.
Yes. I am calling. I'm enjoying your discussion.
Thank you.
I live in the Winfield section of the city, and I have my daughter is in seventh grade. She attended a local charter school in the neighborhood. We thought her reading was just great, kindergarten through five. And I transferred her to a private school in sixth grade. When she was evaluated before admission, I was shockingly informed that she was reading on a fourth grade level. Now, she got, you know, awards and accolades at the school, and I just thought that she was doing really great.
At the charter school, correct? She was getting accolades at the charter school.
At the charter school.
Okay.
And the principal of the private school said that she had to be not only evaluated again, but she had to attend summer school prior to being admitted into their school. So I spent the money, sent her to summer school. She did fairly well, according to the testing. And again, we were shocked. She did enter in the sixth grade She did not do well. She repeated sixth grade, and she did a little better. The beginning of seventh grade was this past September, and I had to withdraw her from that school, the private school. I had to withdraw her from the school. I am now homeschooling her, and I knew something was not connecting. So I had her evaluated. Well, the private school had her evaluated by Cora Services.
Yes.
And I wasn't completely satisfied. I felt as though something was missing. So I took her to another place, SPIN, to have her evaluated. And I got a diagnosis of specific learning disorder.
Yes.
With impairment in reading comprehension. Now, my daughter was a reader. She was a good reader, and she read fluently. What I'm being told now is that she may have read fluently, but while I thought she was at grade level, she reads fluently at a third grade level.
Right. So that's what we were saying when I was saying about the Deutsch list. Kids are word callers, so they can read, but they don't understand what they're reading.
Yes.
So that's the issue. But
yes,
you can also – so Cora – is the agency that tests for non-public, for kids who are in non-public schools.
Okay.
You can always go back to the school district, see what kind of program they have, because obviously your child needs some additional supports. And
yes,
then, I mean, you've missed the deadline for a charter school for next year. You can always get on a wait list for the charter schools. Did the charter school ever request, and it's been 3 years since you've been in there, correct?
Right.
Because typically you can go back 2 years. To make a claim against the district or the charter school, but it's been 3 years. So I would suggest that you go to the public school and enroll, have your child evaluated, and see what kind of program that they can give her there.
And okay, I've already had her evaluated.
And if I may interject, I want to go back to something you said at the very beginning in terms of one of the things the school did. Repeating a grade is not a support or an intervention. In reality, it is a punishment. And
yes,
that is a multiple red flag. Anytime any child repeats a grade, the first thing the parent has to say is, what supports and interventions did you provide, school district, to stop this from happening? And unfortunately, there are many kids out there that repeat grades over and over, and that is so sad. But kudos
to you. And this was the private school that had her repeat.
Yeah,
and that's a private school. Kudos to you for saying an evaluation has to take place, and we're going to find out what we are going to do to help the child be successful.
Exactly. And if your child has, listeners, if your child has an IEP already, and your child is failing and they don't tell you until the end of the year, that's a problem.
No, she didn't have an IEP.
But for those parents whose children do have an IEP,
mm-hmm.
once you see that your child is failing, even though that IEP is written for 1 year, folks, you can open up that IEP as many times as you want. Mm-hmm. So if you see the failures occurring, call an IEP meeting, get the team together, and find out what the problem is and what they can do about it. And if you have an IEP that's the same from year to year to year, that's a problem. That's when you need
True.
To call Montgomery Law. So,
okay.
Yeah, so what are your plans now for your child?
Well, what I'm doing now is she was not being supported in the private school that made her repeat. So I took her out in November. I enrolled her into a cyber charter school.
Okay.
I requested an IEP meeting with the school psychologist. I just got the IEP this past Friday.
Perfect.
So I'm on track with that. I guess what I'm trying to understand now is how do you teach? You know, it's been quite a blow to my daughter, who has always loved learning, to all of a sudden be faced with the shock that I am not doing as well in school as I always have. So, you know, we encountered a little anxiety, a little depression because of this. We're trying to get back on track. So we do have the IEP. I want to put her in a new school for September, and I'm in that process now. And I'm going to put her into a reading literacy summer camp in the neighborhood at a local university.
And Lorna, I will also share with you, I would just encourage you, first of all, just continue to be encouraged. I would encourage you as well to seek out any type of, when you're working with your daughter at home, any type of resources or materials. There's several that are parent friendly that you can purchase through Amazon.com, mm-hmm. through Walmart. Even if you go to the various publishing companies, I used to work for a top publishing company who has excellent resources, guided reading books, leveled books, all sorts of reading manipulatives. And you can use those materials at home as you continue to homeschool her. But even when she transitions back into the regular school, students who are performing below grade level, they need consistent reinforcement. Yeah. And, you know, oftentimes parents or teachers may say, well, we did this 50 times. But guess what? You may need to do it 51 times. Mm-hmm. You know, the reinforcement is extremely important. I hear parents say, well, they took the test and they got a 100 on the test. But when I ask them 2 hours later, they have no idea what they did. And that's absolutely true, because the memory is phenomenal for a certain season and then it just dissipates. Mm-hmm. So constant repetition is extremely important in terms of the anxiety and depression. Many people do not realize, even though dyslexia is a reading and writing issue, there are several emotional challenges that children experience, adolescents, and even adults, from anxiety, depression, crying, sadness, task avoidance, being bullied, being a class clown. All sorts of things. Not saying that your child is being a class clown, but these.
Oh, she was 4 minutes.
Oh, was she? Okay. So, yes. So these are just all other issues that stem from reading challenges, dyslexia, that we don't necessarily talk about. So you be encouraged and demand what is due rightfully so to your child.
I have one more question. Thank you for that. I have one more question. I know you said that I have 2 years, but I am considering seeking legal counsel because she was excused from her special services at the charter school in third grade. And I always wondered, should they have taken her out of special services? So the reading comprehension issue, as I look back over her benchmark scores, there has always been an issue with the reading comprehension.
Okay.
Always.
So I can't, again, we don't give legal advice over the line, but mm-hmm. I will ask you to write the number down. Call Montgomery Law. Our number is 215-650-7563. You can come in for a free consultation.
7563.
And we can talk to you at that time, or you can call 267-767-9940. That number after the show, only because at this time it comes into the show, or 215-650-7563.
Okay.
Okay, thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you very much.
So appreciate you calling in.
Thank you for calling in.
Absolutely. Have a good day.
You too.
Again, listeners, 888-728-9941. Dr. Campbell, I'm glad you brought that up regarding other issues that students have who have dyslexia, as well as any other learning issue.
Yes.
Oftentimes we see that students get into a lot of trouble because they're asked to read. And our clients will come in and say, the teacher made my kid stand up and read, and they acted out right beforehand. I mean, can you talk about that? I think that the biggest thing we have to tell schools is, if you know a child has reading difficulty, especially sounding out words and things like that, do not ask them to stand up in the front of the room and read. And also, let them know in advance. If you're doing a round robin or whatever, you're calling on different people at random, let them know, please, that you are not going to call on them. Do you have students who come in that tell you they are so fearful about going to school because of that?
Yes, not only children. I have adolescents and even adults who are extremely frustrated. They get sweaty palms. They get nauseated in the stomach, headaches, anxiety. It runs the full gamut. And I will tell you, in my evaluations, when I make the recommendations after the diagnosis of dyslexia, if in fact that child is dyslexic, there are other situations that you can, learning situations, healthy learning situations, where the child can experience success. Even if they are dyslexic, the goal is always to encourage hope in that child and to allow them to experience success so they can see that while I have a challenge, I can still be successful. So maybe there's a different type of activity that the child can engage in where they're not necessarily put on the spot. Maybe it's a project, maybe it's something hands-on that can demonstrate their level of understanding. And that's really what the goal is. We want to give the child access to the curriculum, access to the information, and we want to give them access to being able to express themselves in multiple ways through multiple modalities that they understand the content.
Exactly. And teachers need to be able to do that. I know they used to call that portfolio assessment.
Absolutely.
So whatever the student is good at, like you said, drawing a picture or telling a story in that way.
Absolutely.
If they have difficulty with writing, they can always do that. So
yes,
there's lots of options out there. Parents, again, if you have questions, call Dr. Campbell. She's available.
And Mary, I just want to add also, you know, many of the clients that I have, if not all of the clients, even though they are dyslexic, they are extremely talented in
yes.
so many other areas. I have students who are phenomenal artists. I mean, the things that they draw are absolutely amazing. They have been referenced at the Moore College of Art downtown in Philadelphia. They are phenomenal athletes. They are phenomenal poetry writers, even though they may struggle with writing and the spelling, but the articulation of their thoughts, the expression of their thoughts in words, they are extremely creative. So those are some ideas in which teachers can, and every teacher, this goes back to not even if the child is dyslexic, every effective teacher should assess the learning style of the students and have some type of assessment.
Exactly.
When students start at the beginning of the year, what kind of books do your children like to read? What kind of materials do they like to engage in? Graphic novels, nonfiction, mysteries, whatever that may be, because that gives a sense of how that teacher can craft their and organize their classroom at the beginning of
right.
the school year, so every child experiences success from September all the way through June. And that's extremely important.
And what Dr. Campbell said is really important, because in terms of that differential diagnosis, an integral component of being dyslexic or being learning disabled is that the individual, the child, even if it's an adult, has to demonstrate average to above average intelligence. And the majority of those individuals do have above average intelligence.
Absolutely.
But people look at them differently because they struggle with reading. And these are the things that must be addressed if they are going to be successful, and they can be successful.
Look at the way we teach today. So we used to bring our kids years ago to St. Augustine, Florida. And in St. Augustine, they have the first schoolhouse. And you walk in, it's just like we see today in our schoolhouses. Teacher desk up front, kids sitting in the back, same thing today. So we haven't even changed, and we know that all kids learn differently. There is no reason why every teacher in every school in every school district isn't mandated to give an assessment to each student as to how do they learn best, V-A-K-T, which way do they learn best, and teachers made to develop lesson plans that address the students' needs. Not all kids learn by having a teacher stand up in the front of the room. They just don't. They learn in different ways.
Absolutely.
But if you were to ask a teacher, well, how does this child learn best or how does that child learn best? They don't know. It's a guess. So, you know, it would make it easier on the teacher, and it would make it easier and better for the student.
And I just want to add, it's important, you know, a lot of parents tell me that they feel intimidated oftentimes to speak with administrators or even speaking with the classroom teacher, but it's important that you advocate. You are the best advocate for your child, first of all, if you are the parent, but you want to have those conversations with the teacher at the beginning of the year and throughout the year to really give them a holistic view of who your child is and how your child learns and what excites your child, what motivates your child, because we want that environment to be a safe environment, a healthy environment, and an engaging environment.
Okay. So we have another caller on line one, Ellen. Hello, Ellen. How are you? Thank you for calling.
Hi, Dr. Campbell and the staff. This is actually Kyle Hurst, the boyfriend of Ellen.
Hi, boyfriend of Ellen. How are you?
Hi,
and
Kyle.
I'm a childhood friend of Dr. Campbell.
Perfect.
And I was just wanted to chime in on a few things that you were talking about, which is very educational, and it's good to hear that people are really out here trying to help kids these days that are really scared to go to school and have peer pressure on answering questions out loud, reading out loud in school, because the same situation that I pretty much, and I think all of us have had in our past coming up through high school, grade school, and so on and so forth. And what I'm with me, personally, one thing that you were saying, kids with learning disabilities and so on and so forth, one thing with me was when I was coming up, a lot of people don't know, and if they listen, they will know now that I used to stutter. So that, with Dr. Campbell and the rest of you were saying, it helps to get the materials and get and just to learn how to spell, speak, sound out a lot of words that helps you to correct, and it really helps you to learn how to speak difficult words that you would normally not be able to even take a chance of trying. So that's pretty much one of the main things that I wanted to bring up. And also, when I was coming up, I went to grade school. I went to a kindergarten or first grade at a public school. And my mother and father wanted to transfer us, there's three of us, to a Catholic school. Mm-hmm. And because the curriculum wasn't the same in second grade, I had to get put back a grade to go to the Catholic school, which was very weird. I mean, I was younger, but, you know, stuff like that, you know, can damage a child or hurt a child or make them feel like they're not smart enough in this day and age generation.
Right, right.
And what you have just said speaks to how impactful these experiences are. Here you are an adult, and I can sit here and share experiences from school that had a negative impact on me that I carry to this day. And so, again, it is really important that we as parents recognize what students need and, just as important, ensure that school staff also are aware and recognize the impact that they are having on children, because it lasts a lifetime.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for calling in, Kyle.
You're welcome. And if there's more of these that can come up, please let me know ahead of time, because I love to hear this.
Sure.
And it really helps. And I actually have my girlfriend's son here. He's listening to exactly everything that you guys
right.
are saying, and it helps him
because
he's about to start high school
right.
next year. So,
and let him know he needs to advocate for himself. If there's issues, concerns, tell the teacher. Tell the administrator. Always, folks, always go to the administrator and always put things in writing. And that's how I'd like to end with everyone. Word of advice, document, document, document. That's the most important thing. No hearsay. If a principal or a teacher catches you on the way in the building or out of the building, memorialize everything that is told to you, because it's called knew or should have known. If a district doesn't know that something's going on, then they can't respond to it. So thank
right.
you for calling. I think we're at the end of the show. My goodness, it went so quickly. We're going to have more of these about special education. I'd like to thank everyone for listening and for your participation. Thank you to our guest, Dr. Campbell, to our great producer, Ryan Lennox, and as always, to Vern Trent. I'm Mary Montgomery again.
And before we go, Dr. Campbell, please give your number
yes,
one more
again,
time.
Thank
and
you.
Mary, give Montgomery Law's number
thank you.
One more time.
Sure. I can be reached at 215-395-8591. We are located at 225 East City Avenue, Suite 108 in Bala Cynwyd.
And it's called the Reading Clinic.
Yes, the Reading Clinic, Inc. And please go to the website, www.readingclinicinc.org. Please click on the link that says Learn More About Dyslexia. We have partnered with the National Coalition Identifying Dyslexia. And when you go to that link, you will see a tab called The Many Faces of Dyslexia. You will hear children, parents, and educators share stories of how they were diagnosed at a late age with dyslexia, the challenges, the emotional challenges, the behavioral challenges, and the coping mechanisms, everything that they've had to deal with in this journey through dyslexia. So thank you so much for listening.
Important stuff. Again, I'm Mary Montgomery. We are Montgomery Law. We are advocates for all children. If you have a child with a disability who is struggling in school and or a child who's being bullied or being discriminated against for any reason, call us at 833-U, the letter U, can sue, S-U-E, or 833-822-6783 or 215-650-7563. That's 215-650-7563. You can also email me at Mary, M-A-R-Y, at ed-law.com or live chat with us on our website, educationlawyers.com. We represent students and parents so that your child can receive a better education. Goodbye for a while. Until next Sunday, have a blessed week.